I operate on four principles, and all of them could probably name these four principles. If you picked them out and said, oh, you were once on Katie's team, can you tell me what the four principles are that she leads by? It's being open, honest, direct, and transparent, both positively and constructively.
Welcome to the Search and Succeed podcast. I'm Rob Glass, Managing Partner of Hunsdon Partners. We are so fortunate to share many journeys with some exceptional people throughout their careers, people whom are thriving in their area of expertise. And on this podcast, we'll be chatting with them about how they perceive and strive for success within their industry and their life. I hope you enjoy. Today on the Search and Succeed podcast, we're so pleased to have Katie Kirshner join us. Katie is a whole lot of fun, very cool, just a great conversationalist and a super, super leader of people, which we'll get onto. She's a proven transformational leader. Over her career, she's delivered top and bottom line growth through what you'd call a powerful blend of expertise in corporate development that spans business strategy, M&A, marketing, technology, and operations. And Katie is and has always been a key executive driving to clarity and impact in complex business environments. I'd call her a growth visionary with a bias for action. She's uniquely positioned to deliver and scale operational improvement, but her leadership qualities and her methods are something that's really stood out to me over conversations over the years. And that's why I'm really pleased to talk with Katie today about her version of success through her leadership capabilities. Katie, it's so great to be here with you. How are you today?
Oh, I'm living the dream. It's so good to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're in very warm Atlanta, as you just told us off air.
Warm, not yet that humid, but very warm Atlanta. And I'm not complaining, it's sunny. How is it in London or in the UK? Don't know what part of the UK.
Yeah, we're in London. London's trying, always trying. It's sunny one minute, then it's rainy the next minute right now. We live many seasons in each day.
Rob, that which does not kill us.
Yeah, absolutely. It is great to chat with you, Katie. We've talked on a number of occasions over the years, but now to get you on the podcast is truly exciting because there are so many different subject headings, so many different conversations that we've had, whether it's based around you professionally, you personally. We know that you have a book that is going to be coming out at some point in the coming months, which we'll definitely want to get onto. But one of the really great topics of conversation that I think a lot of people are going to want to hear about you talk about specifically is around leadership and around your style and what it means to you, creating your version of success in that respect. Just before we get into that, something that we always start with on the podcast is asking our guests about the phrase search and succeed. So I was really just keen to get your thoughts when you hear the phrase search and succeed, what it means to you.
This is an interesting question. I would break it apart, I guess. So succeed, you would have to define success, which is not necessarily a destination. And if you're searching for success, that's why it's important to define it. If I'm searching for my keys, I'll want to know that keys is what I'm trying to look for. As a mom of three, age five and under, typically when I'm searching for my keys, I end up doing three loads of laundry and then sweeping and vacuuming something and then finding my keys and realizing, oh, that's what I was searching for. But it's important to know what you're searching for so that you can find success in it. So otherwise, you can get derailed and do three loads of laundry, and it costs you time. But as long as those three loads of laundry enables you to reach your success, then go for it. And a clean house is something that's successful for me. So maybe it's less about finding my keys. So when I think about search and succeed, it's what does succeed mean? What does success mean? And search for the path that will get you there, because it's a path, it's a journey, it's not a final destination. That's kind of what I think about it right off the cuff.
That's great. And success is exactly that. To each person, it differs, no doubt. And what I love is that someone who's had and is having the career that you're having, but your go-to thought about success is actually the kids and the laundry rather than the P&L that you need to achieve or the
daunting.
The revenue.
It's so daunting. All the mothers out there will relate to this. The laundry is the most daunting thing. It's the first thing that comes to your mind.
Yeah, my
P&L success, profitable growth, and laundry. That's it.
Yeah, my wife will definitely concur as she'll nod her head listening to this, I'm sure, no doubt. But one of the things that has always really jumped out at me when we talked is, and you've never kind of thrown it down my throat when it comes to, oh, I'm a leader and I'm a leader and I'm a leader and I'm a great leader. You never, that's not your style. But what you've done is really impart on me certain aspects of what you do and how you do it that portrays the way that you lead, which I suppose puts you in a very humble leadership category, which I love. But people seem to really thrive on, working with you and working for you, Katie. And I'd love to just really understand if you could share a bit about your personal philosophy or approach to leadership and, you know, how that's evolved over the course of your career to date.
Sure. You hit it nail on the head. To lead is extremely humbling. It is humbling that someone or people, plural, decide to put their trust in you and follow where you go, because that is leadership. Someone is following you. You are leading the way. And you can't take that lightly. Because it impacts people professionally, sure, but also personally. I mean, we spend a lot of time in our jobs. And so I find that it is very humbling to be a leader. And I didn't start thinking that way in my career. People think, I'm going to be the boss. I'm going to be the CEO. And it's more of a power trip. And there's a lot of power trips in society today, and you see them all over the place. But a true leader knows that it's not about power at all. In fact, it's the relinquishing of power that allows you to be such a great leader. And I learned that. I learned it early on, but not in the beginning. I did think at first, like, oh, it's so cool to be the boss, because then you get to call the shots and people are going to listen to you. And my first thought process was more along the lines of to be listened to, to be able to direct. And I was fortunate to have some extremely great leaders in my life. And I call them leaders rather than managers. And I have a very clean definition of those two things. But when I talk about leadership, these individuals were humble. They were servant-like. One of the companies I worked at, the chairman of the board, also one of the founders, I remember he would walk into an event and his entire leadership team would be there. So the executive leadership team, C-suite, the board members would be there. And he would go sit at the most random table next to the most random person. And I happened to be one of those random people just on that event day. And he sat next to me and he would say, hi, my name is Roger. My name is Roger. He's like, what's your name? Oh, I'm Katie. He's like, oh, and Katie, what do you do at this company? And I was like, low of the low of the low. And I'm sitting here next to the chairman of the board and the founder of a $5 billion company. And that was just showing that rank and title mean absolutely nothing. I turned and said, this is a man that I want to work for. This is somebody that I respect because he clearly respected me and he cared about me as a person, as an individual. He asked me about, personal questions, kind of like, oh, where do you live and where are you from? Why are you here in Europe? And I love that. And I cherish that. And I thought, I want to help people to feel that way. And he wasn't the only leader that I encountered that I had that with. There was, people who directly managed me that also had sort of that mentality. And I've kind of taken that with me to say, I want to be just the same. So how do I be the same? And I got along the lines of servant leadership. That's what each of them showed. It just showed that, and this is, I guess this is the golden nugget. This is the takeaway, is to genuinely care about the person across the table. To genuinely care about the person across the table is true leadership. It is not a self-centered job. It is not thinking inwardly. It is 150% thinking outwardly. And by the way, that's not just you leading people that report into you. It's you leading sometimes clients in hard decisions. If I sit across from the CGO or the CIO or the COO of a company, yes, we are there for a business transaction, but at the end of the day, that business transaction has to help that individual be successful. And I have to genuinely care about the success of that company that's across from me, but also the person. And I think I found that throughout my career, learning how to do that better, because it's always a journey. I'm not perfect at it. And I will continuously learn and grow from it. But putting that at the front of your mind to say, am I actually genuinely caring about this person? How can I serve them best? That'll help you become successful in leadership. It was really long-winded giving you an explanation, but that was my journey.
Yeah, it's great. And is that because you can't cheat people? In order to gain their trust, they have to feel like you are someone that really cares about them specifically, rather than just doing an action of caring, so to speak, in order to try and feel like you're a leader. People just feel, you know, you can't cheat the people that you're leading fundamentally.
100%. And what a great word. The word trust is fundamental to any relationship. And people who follow you, you're in a relationship with your colleagues. You're in a relationship with, you know, your wife, your children, everybody around you, your relationship with your grocer, right? And so trust at the end of the day is that foundation. If you do not have that, you do not have a relationship. And I am, I focus deeply on how to build trust. So my team would tell you, or the people who have reported into me, like literally since I started leading people, they would tell you, I operate on four principles, and all of them could probably name these four principles. If you picked them out and said, oh, you were once on Katie's team, can you tell me what the four principles are that she leads by? It's being open, honest, direct, and transparent, both positively and constructively.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at first you would say, okay, I could be open. I could be honest. We can be honest. You can be a jerk. You can be direct. It not be helpful to that person, not be constructive to that person. You can be transparent and it has nothing to do with the situation. It's not going to help the situation or that person also in general. And so that was important to always say both positively and constructively, because the first instance of someone saying, oh, well, I'll just be an open book. I'll just say what I want to say. And I'm like, well, yes, but is it helping that person at the end of the day? This is where the genuinely care about the person across the table. And how you present the information, but that builds trust, absolutely builds trust. And I actually like the equation for trust. And I've heard this from Andy Stanley, John Maxwell kind of dabbles in this as well, but it's the equation for building trust is experience versus expectations. So you've set expectations either in your head or verbally. Yep. And then the actions are what's going to tell you whether or not you're going to trust that person. So the gap between those things is either trust or distrust, right? And I like that as equation. It's what are your expectations versus what actually happens between you and that person. And so I am a huge advocate at setting very clear expectations, which sounds super funny because it's like, oh, it could be clear to me, but is it super clear to the other person? So it's how do you clarify that? But setting expectations is very important. And then you allow the experience or the actions to happen, right? Well, if you're in a situation where you haven't set expectations, maybe they're in your head, maybe you just think, oh, shouldn't everybody know you should be on time for work? Shouldn't everybody know, you know, there maybe should be something everybody should know, right? Mm-hmm. And I love how Andy Stanley talks about how you fill that gap. I say give people the benefit of the doubt until they prove you otherwise. It takes a while for that. He calls it give someone a generous explanation. And I like that because if you think about it, let's say you walk into a relationship with someone or you walk to have a conversation and you're expecting that person to trust you, like just automatically, like, why wouldn't you trust me? Of course I'm doing the right thing. You should trust me. But we don't actually give that in reverse all the time. Somebody walks in our life, we don't automatically go, oh, I'm just going to trust that person. We're like, oh, no, you got to earn it. You got to earn that trust from me.
Yeah.
And so the idea around what I would just say benefit of the doubt, which is also generous explanation, takes it up a level. But the generous explanation you would give that person is, let's say someone's late to work. If you're late to work, you would automatically, oh, well, it was just traffic was bad. So you're giving yourself a explanation. Well, traffic was bad. I'm not normally late. Like, I didn't mean anything bad by it. But if someone else is late to work, you may go, oh, that person is lazy. That person is like, really? Why do they have to be late to work? Shouldn't they know to be on time? Aren't they mature enough? Now you're questioning their maturity or whatever it is, right? Whereas if you were going to give them a generous explanation, maybe, oh, you know what? We live in Atlanta and all my Atlantans will relate to this. There may have been some pretty bad traffic. That's probably why Joe was late. Rob was late. It's probably the reason why. Now, if Rob and Joe are late every day or 25 days out of the month, that's a performance conversation. It's a little bit different.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not jumping to the worst, not jumping to distrust, but jumping to trust and giving a generous explanation and allowing that person to give an explanation before just writing it off. So when you say trust, to me, it's like, I could talk all day about how fundamental trust is to leadership, and leadership is a relationship.
Obviously, trust is a huge part of the way that you lead personally. And I think the way it sounds like the way that you lead has been sort of a built up through an amalgamation of leaders that you've liked working for previously, that you've looked up to previously, and that you've also sort of fostered in your own mind as to what the best way to actually lead and do things is. Other than trust specifically and building rapport with your team members, what are the things that you feel really separate a great leader from someone who's average or good at what they do?
Oh, authenticity and unwavering authenticity. So yeah. I am who I am. If I go to the pub with you on Friday and chat you up, I'm going to be the exact same person as if you sat across from me in a meeting. And it doesn't mean that my focus is different or the topics within the room are not supposed to be different, right?
Yep.
But I am genuinely going to be the same person. You're not going to think, oh, Katie's way different when you're in a meeting with her than if, and I'm not saying sometimes that's good for people, but for me, I am unwaveringly authentic, and I feel that it has helped my leadership rather than hurt it. And the reason I say that is because you know what to expect. People get really nervous when they don't know what to expect from someone, when they can't read someone. It makes people nervous. I mean, you've probably experienced that, right? You're like, oh, I wonder what this person's going to say, or I'm so nervous and putting this in front of them, or maybe I won't put it in front of them. So holding back ideas because I don't know how they're going to react to it. Or I screwed up big time. And I don't really want to tell anybody because I don't want to tell Katie because I don't know how she's going to react. But if you're unbelievably consistent and authentic and they see you the same way in these situations, then they'll know what to expect. Then they'll know when they walk in, this is probably how she's going to react. But I got to bring it to the table. And my reaction may be, and it's not going to be like a motherly reaction. My reaction may be, all right, how can we work together to make this better? And we may have to work through that. And it may be painful, but at the same time, you'll know to expect that, right? And so authenticity to me is very important. I'm a very, I can joke around a lot, but I can also get down to business. But my team also knows the difference of we can have fun while we get stuff done. And that's, I'm a poet and I didn't even know it. I didn't mean for that to rhyme, but that actually worked out. We can fun and we can get stuff done.
I don't think anyone would ever describe themselves as unauthentic, right? Because I don't think it's something that you can say about yourself. Someone else can say it about you, I'm sure. But if you're the type of leader that struggles to maintain consistency, i.e. they are a very different person when they take their professional hat off to when they're sitting in meetings, but they are in leadership positions. How would you advise that leader who is trying to be authentic, but perhaps where they can't be consistent as a person in every scenario? They're trying to still be the best possible leader, but to your point before, not make the person be unsure as to what kind of person that they're going to be speaking to when they approach them.
That's interesting you say that.
Or would you just say that's a bad leader?
I think, to me, a bad leader's, you know, ethics is probably the issue, but like, because I think everyone is a growing, not everyone, the people who have the characteristics and want to lead, although anyone could be a leader, you're constantly growing and learning and changing. There's no end destination that now I'm a great leader, right? Because things change, people change, society changes. However, I would say the reason that I would call myself authentic is because I never, if you catch yourself using the phrase, I would never in X situation with so-and-so, I would never, I think a red flag should go up because you're being inauthentic to yourself. So if you're authentic to yourself, so your values, to how you would approach a situation, no matter who the person is that is across the table, you inevitably are showing authenticity, right? And hopefully that's what people are seeing from you. So I think a lot of times when people come off as inauthentic, it may be because they're trying to be a different person in front of different people. And at the end of the day, it doesn't help you, but it also doesn't help them. For what they to expect. So if I was going to sit across the table from the CEO of a company or the chairman of the board of a company, I will be the same person as if I sat across the table from my boss. The information may be tighter. The conversation may be more to the point, you know, less fluff and personal anecdotes, but I'm still going to be authentic. So that phrase I think is important. It's the, oh, well, I would never tell the CEO how I really feel about that.
Yeah.
But I would tell my team and my manager all day long.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's just inauthentic. You're not being authentic to yourself. you should tell the CEO in a nice way, or find a way that it would resonate with him and he would be able to digest it rather than get defensive about it. And there are word tactics to that, but hopefully that's helpful. Does that make sense?
I love it. It makes complete sense. I think, you know, if someone said, what's the best way to be a leader? And I want one word, authenticity, just absolute. I mean, obviously trust and there's so many words, but being authentic fundamentally creates that level of trust, both when you're managing up and managing down. And people can never say that you're not being yourself. And they can either like you or maybe not like you based on your true authentic way. But I think it's brilliant. I really do.
It's because it humanizes you.
Mm.
It really humanizes you. You are a human at the end of the day. And by the way, you are going to mess up unbelievably. But the authentic part of you is you're okay with messing up and being verbal about messing up because you're still a human. That's authentic. It's authentic for you to get a presentation wrong. It's also authentic for you to maybe get angry in a conversation with one of your employees and come back later and say, man, you know, I'm sorry, I got angry about that. And that's not really how I should have approached that.
Yeah.
The more authenticity, which trust leads to you being able to be more authentic, helps you to build trust, vice versa. It's all just to help people to understand that you're a human. People follow humans because they're so relatable. The more relatable that you can be as a human, the more someone's like, wow, they get me, or I can connect with that person in some shape or form. That's why I can talk about laundry because I know everyone can relate to it. And I'm a human at the end of the day. Yeah. I have a personal life.
I think everything that we've spoken about here is I agree with absolutely. But I think it's actually very nuanced. I think there'll be some people that listen to this and think, well, if you're always consistent and always authentically yourself, where is the argument? And this is just playing devil's advocate, not say one is right and one is wrong, but where is the argument to say that, to use a sporting phrase, man management? comes into things. You know, we have different people, different personalities within our teams. How does being consistent always allow you to adapt to different people within your team who do things in different ways, take things in different ways, maybe take different tones from certain things that are said or done? How do you adapt when you're always being constantly authentic?
It's a great question. The first thing I said was to genuinely care about the person that's across the table from you.
Yeah.
And so I can be, that is being authentic to myself, because mm-hmm. that's one of the values I hold. And so for me to genuinely care about that person, and let's say that person, they take feedback well when it is packaged, I don't want to say with fluff, but when it's packaged with some positivity to help round out maybe some of the things, opportunities for them to work through. Whereas I could have somebody else that's like, don't put fluff in here. It just makes me not hear what you actually want to say to me. Be very direct. Yeah. And I'm still being genuine with myself by giving the feedback, right? Being ingenuine, being inauthentic would mean I would be like, oh, well, that person doesn't take feedback well, so I'm not going to give them feedback. That would be inauthentic to me. What I can do though is say, I care about that person so much that I'm going to figure out the way that they'll receive this well. And that may be the approach of packed with positivity or being super direct and blunt, which, by the way, I've had employees in both directions, which is interesting, because you get in one conversation, you're like, wow, that it seems like I'm a different person. I'm not a different person. I'm still giving feedback, and I'm giving tough feedback. I'm just doing it in a different way that person can receive it. And both of those people will know, I can expect that Katie will always tell me what she actually feels about this, that she's going to give me the feedback, that it's going to help me. If that answers your question.
Yeah, absolutely does. Absolutely does. It's, you know, it's all about flexibility, adaptability, and showing the emotional intelligence to deal with different people, different personalities, whilst remaining constant in the way that you do.
Clear and effective communication. I think everybody would suggest that all they ever want from the person that they're dealing with is for them to be open, honest, and clear, and communicate with them. I think what's really interesting about that, though, is that, to David's question that I think you've answered brilliantly, is that you could say the same thing to two different people and they would receive it in different ways. Okay, maybe a mm-hmm. slightly bigger focus group than two, but the point is that, you know, people receive things very differently. Just a quick pause to the podcast to share with you a charity very close to our hearts, Prevent Breast Cancer, who are just incredibly passionate about stopping the disease before it starts. Prevent Breast Cancer promote healthier lifestyles, screening and early diagnosis. They make sure 100% of their research funding is focused on preventing breast cancer for future generations. They're the only UK charity entirely dedicated to the prediction and prevention of breast cancer. They're right at the front line in the fight against the disease, and we are right behind them. You know, you talk about when you manage people across the table, genuinely caring. What about like leading thousands of people? How do you then make it filter down? Is it just the case of hiring the right type of people that are then going to use your leadership styles to then do the same to the teams below them? Or is there something slightly wider than that?
I would hope we have lots of different leadership styles within a team that I would build that has that that caliber of hierarchy. It is, everything starts from the top. Everything starts from the top. So if you are this trust is important, give people generous explanations, you know, be quick to trust, slow to distrust, slow to assume, then you are, and I hate to put it this way, but this is the cliche of leading by example, and you emulate that. You build a team that you're already setting that as an expectation because it's your actions. And so it is an expectation through what you establish as your vision, your values, you know, your purpose for your team. And that should trickle down What you want to get to is you get to an organization where if someone isn't doing that, isn't building the trust, isn't being transparent, isn't helping in however they're going to lead, right? People are going to lead in different ways, that they feel out of place. You stick out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
And is that hiring the right people? 150%. Is that letting people go that really don't fit in that culture? I almost think that if you don't fit in that culture, you end up leaving because you do stick out like a sore thumb and your team members will see that and let you know that, right? And it just happens. So you're like, oh, I don't, people want to fit in, right? They want to fit in whatever bucket. They'll try and find the person that they're going to identify with. And if you're so far from what that culture of that company is or that organization that's large, inevitably you're going to want to leave because you're going to try and find a place where you fit. And hey, there's another culture. There's another company or culture that you're going to fit great in, and it's a different style. My style is just this way.
Yeah.
I was going to say. So that's how you do it with the masses.
Yeah. And I was going to say, there will be companies out there where the leadership style is leading with an iron fist, is incredibly hierarchical, is do as I say, not as I do. And, you know, there'll be companies out there that will be successful, but it might not necessarily be the right type of atmosphere and environment that, you know, leads to, you know, the type of success or your version of success, Katie, or even where there's an obvious outcome of success, because perhaps it's harder to get to because the leadership style is a little less clear and authentic, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say the more heavyweight though is on the trust aspect. You know, if you have distrust at the top, which leads to paranoia, if it trickles throughout, it'll trickle throughout the organization because I don't trust you. It's like, so therefore you're saying I shouldn't trust people and I shouldn't trust you as a leader as well because you're not trusting me. And then you're creating a gap, and that creates internal competition. It creates a lot of toxicity, where people are holding back ideas rather than sharing them, which only enables your company to grow and flourish when people are really bringing the best versions of themselves to each other, and they're not in fear that someone's going to steal an idea or they can't trust them. Because at the end of the day, this is what I think is so important. If you instill a culture that you genuinely care about the person that's across the table from you, you would hope that peers would do that. And you would share ideas, you would be open to change, and that's tough. That's a whole nother topic, is change, but you would be open to change because you're trusting the people behind you because you believe they have your best interests at hand. And I think that trickles down, and it does all stem from trust. If you don't have it at the top, it's never going to flow to the bottom, and you'll have a pretty toxic company, and you may be successful for a short amount of time, but it'll come to a breaking point. Yeah. And it's funny because in some organizations where there is distrust at the top and you have seen trickle down, there are like little pockets of light. So if you have a leader that has decided that's not the way that I'm going to lead, I'm going to build an organization for this, you'll see success in like this tiny pocket. Yeah. And sometimes that tiny pocket will end up leaving that company because when they try and grow or they stem the leadership style outside of that pocket, it's hard to get to the rest of the company. And sometimes it's stopped because, you know, there's distrust elsewhere.
Yeah, we see it all the time. Absolutely. So that they stick out like a sore thumb because they're not fitting into the rest, like you said before. And we do see people in that exact scenario, you know, that then have to leave the company, or, you know, they just get headhunted elsewhere just because of it. And another culture resonates with them. I think everything we've just spoken about is kind of gold. I think if you were, you know, leading a team, leading an organization, everything that you've just spoken about in the last however many minutes, I think it's like take it and try and run with it, because it just makes so much sense. And we talked at the top of the podcast about the fact that you're bringing a book out, which is no mean feat, right? I think to...
18 months I've been working on it, I will tell you it's no mean feat.
Right. Yeah, good. Yeah, you tell us how long it took and tell us the blood, sweat and tears, because I'm sure it deserves to be talked about. Tell us about it. I'm really keen. I know you told me a little bit about it before, but just give us a top line, because I'd love to know more and share it.
Well, let me talk a little bit about the why behind it before I talk about what it's actually about. And we've touched on all of it right now, is genuinely caring about the people that are across the table, right? So I've been leading teams for some years. I'm not going to say how many, because then it'll dictate how old I am. Although, hey, if you're not getting older, then. But the why behind it is, what I noticed was I had, you know, come up with this methodology. I don't want to say come up with it. I just did a certain thing with my team members to help them become the best version of themselves. I didn't realize I was doing a methodology or like a framework or applying it to everybody. It was just how I led people. And when I say becoming the best version of themselves, it was helping them to get out of their own way. I noticed that a lot of my team members, for me to help them be the best of the best that they could be, was to help them to see themselves in a broader light, to, you know, expand out the flashlight, see those flashlights where you can hone in or you can make a bigger light. And I feel like people have this very singular view of themselves sometimes. They don't realize how much more they're capable of. So I had a big heart to help people see more of themselves, help the people that reported into me specifically see more of themselves when we went through these performance reviews. And I was like, hey, you know, where do you want to go? What do you want to do? And I realized I was doing the same for every single employee. And then people started to approach me outside of my organization to start mentoring them. Like, they would hear me speak somewhere, or someone would tell someone who would tell someone. And then I have a university person who would, you know, they're about to graduate out of university and they're saying, hey, can you do my mentoring me? Will you? And I was like, okay, well, yeah, I'll just apply the same methodology. You know, so it's not a methodology. I'm thinking like, yeah, sure. Let's talk about what you want to do, how we're going to do that, your path, et cetera. And then I realized I am one human being and I only have so many hours in the day. And I realized that as I went through this with people, that it really helped them. You know, they came back like, oh, I have beautiful letters from some people that I took through this methodology, or that I just helped become the next best version of themselves. And I thought, oh, if this works, if this is helping people to see themselves in a broader light, to find purpose, to find meaning, then it sucks that I can only do it with the 24 hours a day, 7 days a week that I have. How can I extend that? And so, and this was not my idea solidly. This was somebody else. They're like, you should write a book. In fact, what they said is, you should be a motivational speaker. You should go out and do executive coaching, and you should do coaching in general. And I thought, but again, if I'm doing coaching in general, I'm only reaching the person that I'm coaching.
Yeah.
And so they're like, well, you should write a book. You should write a book about it. And then you can do like talks about it. I said, well, yeah, I guess a book would be helpful if I can like get it out. And I'm a recovering marketer, so I can figure out a way to get it out there. But this was all an attempt to say, like, if I can help just 10 more people outside of the people who had directly reported to me, or someone who's asking me to mentor them, it would be so meaningful. And it's particularly about what's going on in society today, because I feel like, and I don't want this to be a downer, but this is just a reality. You know, we have suicide rates in our younger populations skyrocketing. And it really pulls my heart. It's heartbreaking for me. Somebody sent out a challenge to say, you know, you should work towards find whatever breaks your heart, whatever that thing is that will truly break your heart, and work towards it. That should be what you put all your energy into, because you can't save the whales and save everybody else. But if you have the one thing that really breaks your heart, you should work towards it. And this is the thing that breaks my heart, because when someone takes their life, it means that they don't think that their life is meaningful. And so this was something, if I'm going to help people become the best versions of myself, I'm going to help them to know that they are the best, that there is meaning and there's purpose in their life. And they're just seeing themselves through this singular lens and don't realize how beautiful their skill sets and capabilities are. And it may just not be applied in the right company, in the right nonprofit, or just in the right relationships that they're building. Yeah. And so I decided to write this book.
Yeah.
And so what is this book about?
What is it that you want people to take away from reading the book? You taught there, obviously, about finding their meaning in life, to be the best that they could possibly be. When someone closes the book at the end, the last page? How do you want them to feel? What do you want them to do with that?
Yeah, so if that was the why, then the what in the book is, if someone was to go through this book, I would, and it's more of a, I hate to call it the book or workbook, because there's a methodology you should be able to work through and apply. If they close this book at the end of the day, what I would hope they'd take away is that they have a better understanding of purpose and they have a path to get there. So it could be drawn out, it could be rough, but there's a path. They have an end in mind. That end always changes, and that's in the book, right? You should always reevaluate, but that there's meaning towards that. I have if you don't have a destination and you're just going and you're going and you're going, sometimes you stop and be like, to what end? People ask us, like, to what end am I doing this? I feel like I haven't made any progress. Well, progress towards what? What are you trying to make progress towards? For all you know, you could have made 75% of progress, but progress towards what? And if you haven't defined the what, then of course you feel lost and you feel that you're not doing anything, you're not contributing to society or whatever it is that you're feeling you're not progressing to. Have you defined what you're even trying to get to?
Yeah.
And so I'd hope at the end of the day, you have an idea of what you're progressing towards, and you have a path to get there.
Awesome. That's so great. It really is. And do we have a name for this book yet, Katie?
I do not have a name for it. I don't have a name for it.
I've got it. I've got it.
You do. Okay, I'm ready.
Genuinely care about the person across the table.
Okay, I like that as a tagline. Well, we're working title. Now you're giving me my second working title. I did have a working title, but I don't want it to be so much about business, although it can obviously apply to your professional life. Yeah. But this really is about getting unstuck in life, not just unstuck in your career.
Yeah. Well, I have no doubt that, and I really look forward to reading it. When do you think it might be available?
It'll be next year. I have the outline and I've started to put some pen to paper, and I'm not the writer at all. And luckily I have a great network. I have wonderful friends, some of them award-winning writers that are going to help me to make sure that I'm getting the right message across. But yeah, it'll be in the next 12 months. Let's shake on it. Let's say it. It's going to be in the next 12 months.
Yeah. What an awesome achievement it'll be. And I think that I think everything we've spoken about today has just made me smile, actually, Katie, hearing you talk about, you know, the way that that you like to lead and your thoughts on leadership. But it's not really just about leadership, it's just about who you are and just being a proper person, and the fact that other people then buy into that and become the best that they can possibly be about themselves. And we talk all the time on this podcast and in our work about being the best version of yourself. And if we can all be the best versions of ourselves and all aim towards our versions of success, and as you say, have an end goal, have a reason to, or have an aim and a target to get to, I think we'll all be a lot happier.
It ain't rocket science.
Yeah.
But sometimes the simplest thing can be the hardest thing to do.
I think that's a really great place to leave this. We could talk for a heck of a long time. It's been just great. I really hope that we can do this again sometime, maybe at the point where the book comes out. Katie, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today. It's been wonderful.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Search and Succeed podcast. Please subscribe and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. We'll see you on the next one.